Hi, everyone. I'm Kevin Winder, and thanks for tuning in to another podcast of Beyond Everything Radio. And like always, I have a question for you. Do you see everything as beautiful? Today, we continue our examination of the wisdom of Solomon as we explore how he moved from a point of despair and anger into the realization that everything, and I do mean everything, is beautiful in its time. So join me now as we learn to see beyond our life of reacting in anger into a spacious and prosperous awareness that everything belongs. Hello, everybody. Thanks so much for tuning back into another podcast of Beyond Everything Radio. I'm your host. My name is Kevin Winder. I like to serve the world as an online pastor, author, and uncoach, among many other things. So glad to have you with me. If it's your first time, I want to say thank you for tuning into this podcast. These recordings are designed just for you, as well as many, many others. We've been doing them now for well over 3 years, and I want to thank all of you who tune in each and every week. I get letters from a lot of you folks who tell me that these Sunday podcasts, these newsletters that come out on Winder's Windshield, is kind of like your church. Like, if you don't go to church on Sunday, having this time of reflection, of consideration, is really your sacred space. And I'm so glad to hear that, because it really is an alternative that builds people up, refreshes you, and actually gets you into the right frame of mind to go out and live your life with intention and purpose. So if I can help you in any other way, please log on to kevinwinder.com. Send me an email. You can always reply to the newsletters that come out each and every week on Winder's Windshield. If you're not a part of that, go to my website, www.kevinwinder.com. Sign up today for Winder's Windshield. Be a part of this growing community and see if it doesn't impact the way you think. So folks, today we're going to continue what we started last week. We're going to do a series, and I'm calling it Wise Man Says. We're not doing a Bible study of Ecclesiastes in the typical sense, but we are pulling from these major big themes, these riffs that Solomon has put down for us. And this comes from the Jewish wisdom literature. It is considered to be, Solomon was considered to be the wisest and wealthiest man that has ever lived. His ideas, his perspective, really brings a lot to the table. And I would like to say that of all the books in the Bible, of all the 66 books in the Bible, Ecclesiastes is by far the book that I have read more than any other. If I were trapped on a desert island and could only have one book of the Bible, Ecclesiastes would be it. So what that means, this is pretty cool, right? So let's find out. Today we're talking about Wise Man Says Everything Belongs and is Beautiful. Everything belongs and is beautiful. And right away, I hope that title captures your attention, because I'm sure as you're looking at the news, you're looking at everything that's going on right now, you're thinking, certainly not everything is beautiful. Certainly not everything belongs. Some things don't belong, like war and hatred and anger and all these things, right? Well, folks, they do. And I hope by the end of this post, you'll see things the same way. I mean, just ask yourself this question. Think about how many times in the course of the day you will become annoyed. I mean, think about it. Are you going to go from your waking time you wake up? Are you annoyed that you even had to wake up with an alarm? Are you annoyed that the coffee pot was dirty when you wanted it clean? Are you annoyed that, the dishes were not loaded? Are you annoyed that the kids woke you up? Are you annoyed that the cat made a mess? Are you, right? Take that out of the house. Now you're on your commute. Are you annoyed at the guy who's driving? Are you annoyed that there's no good parking? Are you annoyed at the way your car is running? Are you annoyed that something is not right? You get to work. Are you annoyed that, you know, that person is making noise? Are you annoyed that the report's due and you didn't know about it? Are you annoyed you're not prepared for the meeting? Do you see where I'm going, folks? How many times do you get this grain against you in a course of a day? Is it 20 times? Is it 50 times? Is it 100 times that you get aggravated, angered? I mean, and how many of these little aggravations actually turn into anger? Like when you watch the news, does it make you angry? You know, when you're listening to the music or the radio or something on the news on the way in your commute, does it anger you? Did that driver anger you? Did your kids anger you? Boy, you know, I'm trying to get at the life experience of the modern American person. Are you angered more than 10 times a day? You know, think about this. If we experience the emotion of anger, even the slighter version in the term of annoyance, our bodies are reacting to stress. This means that adrenaline is being released. Blood vessels are constricting. The left hemisphere of our brains become excitable, and certain functions of our limbic system are actually reduced. Anger reduces cognitive function. Did you hear that? Anger reduces cognitive function. It lowers your intelligence. And it's palpable in a way that can take many times longer to kind of cool off, to return to a state of calm than it took to leave the state of calm, right? You hear this term, the hair trigger or a quick temper. That's because you can go from zero to angry in under a minute, maybe in 10 seconds. But it's going to take you 10 minutes to go from that state of anger into a place of calm, right? You got all those imaginary conversations in your head that are saying, that guy, boy, if he says this, I'm going to say that. I should do this. I should have done that, right? You just kind of relive the experience in your head from this vantage point of somebody who should have, would have, could have, will do, you know. And what is that? What is that? You see, I'm using this to expose something about our soul. And this post is not a how-to on living in peace from a centered place, okay? And, you know, if you don't already have a practice that turns that off, that is a counterbalance to those kinds of thoughts, to that kind of negative energy in your life, if you don't have some kind of spiritual practice to undo that malware script, then a tool may not be helpful to you, because you're basically living unaware. You're living in a state of unawareness or low consciousness, okay? Once you get to the place where you're like, I need to wrap this up, I need to bring this into control, then a practice would be useful to you. You know, instead, what I'm hoping is that this post will jar you, it will wake you up, it'll help illuminate what is just beyond our short views, so that we can become free from blaming everything and everyone around us, and we can become free of, you know, blaming all that is wrong in the world with that dude or that person or that policy or that thing. See, we're externalizing everything. We're blaming. And that is a very spiritual process. In fact, it's actually what anger does. And it's actually a very prideful thing, and I'm going to show you how that's the case. But you see, folks, our life of stress is not caused from the outside in, right? It's not because, you know, the politicians did that thing. That's not what's making you angry. It's not because that guy cut you off. It's not because your kid behaved that way. Those are not the things that are making you angry, folks. Now, I want to get at this in a unique way, okay? Now, the wisdom of Solomon, as he said in Ecclesiastes 10, verse 19, he said, money answers everything. Money answers everything. And when I was in my 20s and early 30s, I can tell you, I barely made a livable wage. And on top of that, I was more than $45,000 in debt between my school loans, my auto loan, and consumer debt on credit cards. $45,000. I call that my angry phase of life, because I was always livid. I was always angry. I was road raging. I was mad at the opposite party politically. I was mad at everybody everywhere I went. I hated people. I was so angry. In fact, my wife gave me the nickname, the cold-hearted bastard. Not because of the way I treated her, but because of the fact that I was so insensitive to everybody around me. And now that I look back 20 years later, I'm debt-free. I earn a comfortable living, you know, so I can say without a doubt that I am by far less angry in the world. Now, let me ask you, is that because life got easier for me, right? I started to earn more money. Did that make life easier? You see, folks, I'm getting at something here, and this speaks to your life of prosperity in the world. You see, my responsibilities now are far greater than they were 20 years ago. So how can life get easier when responsibilities are going up? But I can tell you life is easier in some way because I earn more money, but that's not the reason. You see, it's tempting to conclude that if you have enough money, the stress goes away. But we know that's not true. Just look at Hollywood. Look at all the people who have plenty of means who cannot live in peace, who go bankrupt. Why? Because they don't have the means to manage their lotto winnings or whatever it is. You see, it's not that if you have enough money, stress goes away. The opposite is true. You see, my anger produced low consciousness that kept me just barely getting by. I want you to put those two together. I want you to put your anger and your earning into the same bucket. They seem like they are probably disconnected, separate things. But hopefully, by the end of this podcast today, you're going to realize that everything belongs and everything is beautiful in its time. You see, earning money is not outside in. It's not, I just got to get a better job and I'll make more money. Earning is not, I just have to win this big thing. I have to get this big contract. I have to make it somehow. And you have to focus on all these externals. Folks, earning money is inside out. It's an inside job. You see, for me, I changed my framework from my anger phase. I had to do some soul work. And when I changed that soul inside of me, the disposition, I got rid of the malware scripts that were running in my thinking, opportunities became visible for me. The opportunities to earn became visible. They were invisible when I was angry, right? And you'll see, we change our lot in life through these counterintuitive ways. Right? It's easy to just stay angry and go out and blame the man and blame the political party of your choice and blame the economy and blame your country and blame this and blame that for your lack of success or progress in the world. All of that is false. Change what's going on the inside and opportunities will become visible. As you see them, you act on them and you act on them with excellence. And I promise everything will change. Now, our bodies are telling us something. Now, if it seems like I'm jumping around, I hope you understand that I do this because I weave a lot of different threads into the tapestry here, all right? But our bodies under stress are telling us something. Anger clamps down our soul, just as it does, it clamps down our blood vessels. And when the blood vessels constrict, the pressure within inside them goes up, right? And anger clamps down our soul and it pressurizes our soul. It backfills this space where shalom, which is a Jewish term, which means the well-being in the whole of life, right? To have well-being in everything, your finances, your health, your family, your relationships, your income, your property, everything you have, everything you do has well-being and high functioning. That's called shalom. And you see, anger backfills the space where shalom once dwelled. And so it has this negative impact on the inside of us. And it's really hard to see, but aggravation is a form of deep-seated pride or what Solomon calls vanity. Now, maybe you can't see that, but I'm going to try and help you out. Vanity, the Hebrew word hebel, is used to describe a mist, a vapor, a breath, right? It exists, right? We know breath exists. We know mist exists, but there's no real substance to it, right? Vanity is that. It's that thing that exists that doesn't have a real substance to it. It's an empty pursuit brought on by a mind that is convinced that we have much more power than we actually do. You see, it's the mind that says, man, if I was in control of the government, I would fix that. I would solve that. If I was the boss, if I had the means, then I would do it. I would fix this. I would solve this. I would do so much better. If I could just get the chance, I could outperform everybody else. See, this is what Solomon calls vanity. It is a chasing after the wind. So much of life, as Solomon puts it, is this trying to pursue this thing that has no real substance. It's an empty pursuit brought on by a mind that's convinced that we have way more power than we actually do. What he's saying is that you've got this system wrong. You're trying to outside in the world instead of inside out the world. You see, this is low-level, barely conscious mind that thinks that way. And it just goes through life maximizing pleasure and minimizing pain. I mean, you're literally like an orangutan, like a dog, like any other creature in the world that says, well, I'm cold, I'm going to move into the sun. I'm hungry, I need to eat this thing, right? We're not much more evolved than that in many cases. You see, and when we function on this creaturely plane, when we outside in the world, we are myopic, we're short-sighted, we're self-focused, and we interpret the world as getting in our way. Now pause for a minute. How often and how many times throughout the course of the day do you see others as getting in your way? The line at the Starbucks, are those people kind of getting in your way? The traffic jam? The person, your mid-level manager, where if you had the chance, you could be a way better vice president, but those people are in your way, the people with seniority, the whatever it is, all the immigrants, all the non-immigrants, all the Republicans, all the Democrats, if it weren't for them getting in the way, life would be better. Is that you? Think about it, folks. This is a toxic way of thinking. And Solomon is really exposing some amazing wisdom that can be profoundly life-changing here. You see, when people are in the way, this is called barely conscious mind. Competition is born from this mist, this pride, this vanity. So do you see the vanity now? I mean, anger reeks of pride. So can you see how this vapor is the low-level basis for so much of the world's activity and output? And this is Solomon's conclusion. He went around and he just says, man, everything is vanity. I went around and I tried to learn and put my mind to everything, and I denied my eye no pleasure. And man, let me just tell you, everything is vanity. This is a rampant problem. Hasn't really changed much since his life, has it? See, we haven't really evolved. We just go through life feeling distinct from everybody else, as though our purpose, our goals, our life is somehow better, more important than everybody else's. And, you know, we just try and improve our lot, you know, our life at the expense of others, which is just basically maximizing pleasure, minimizing pain. And Solomon called this a striving after the wind. So, you know, the life of Solomon shows us that he climbed the competition in the consciousness ladder all the way to the top. Historians tell us that no human in history, by comparison, has ever achieved his wealth nor his wisdom. And at the highest level, there wasn't that much there. In fact, it was kind of empty. Only this stark reminder that his death would just be the same as everybody else's death. You know, so why should I be so wise if at the end of my life I'm just going to die? I'm no better than a dog, right? Why do you suppose the wealthy people in the world focus more on health than the poor people do. Yeah, let's excuse for a minute yet that certainly healthy food is more expensive than poor food, but that's not why, right? It's not that health is a luxury item. You can focus on being healthy even without means. Health is a byproduct of consciousness. Once you have economic means, you start thinking, I want to preserve my life. I don't want to get sick and get a disease, right? I mean, what's the irony there of winning the $1.6 billion lotto and then the next day getting a deadly disease, right? You want to prevent that. And so as you have means, you want to preserve your health and go deeper into it, right? So this is the case. Nearly 70% of smokers come from poverty. 70%. And so, yeah, I'm weaving all of these pieces together, folks, so that you can see that consciousness, the raise of your consciousness, is very, very important. And Solomon concluded that, hey, there is more gain in wisdom than in folly. Yes, if you climb the ladder all the way to the top, but there's not really anything there that's not there at the bottom. It's just there in a different way. But he did say that it is better to have wisdom than to have folly. There is great gain in wisdom. And the answer wasn't to just quit and drop out of the race, which is what some people do. They say, well, I already can tell that there's nothing up there. I'm not going to go there. So they quit. And others say, it's just stay in the race. Just keep grinding it. You know, you can't just work the system all the way till you die, although some people do that too. You see, what Solomon's getting at is that wisdom frees us from the binaries. You know, rather than living in reaction to all things, which is a stress-inducing lifestyle, we just begin to truly live at the point of acceptance within everything. But how do you do that? How do you live at a point of acceptance? How do you accept everything? Well, Solomon's conclusions revealed that there is a time for everything under the sun. You know, we are neither to avoid the displeasure of life any more than we are to try and permanently possess the pleasure of life. And that's where the mistake is. It's the avoidance of the pain, and it's trying to possess the pleasure. Both of them are moments in time which need to be fully experienced, not avoided, and not possessed. They can't be possessed. You see, there's this third thing, and it's a higher up and further back, but it's this realization that you have to be here now, being here now, in the present. You see, each thing in life does not come as distinctly good or distinctly bad, but it comes complete and beautiful as it is within the context of all of life. So every moment of every day is a complete and beautiful moment containing everything that you need, everything that there is. It's beautiful and wonderful in and as it, because it's welling up and becoming the context of your life. You see, all things are by design and provide a rich experience of life. And Solomon said, you know, God has made everything beautiful in its time. And it's not something that we're ever going to fully understand. Ecclesiastes 3:11. You see, he goes through this whole series of couplets where he looks at things like war and peace and, you know, mending and embracing and ceasing to embrace, dancing and mourning, right? But what he's trying to say is that, yes, there's a high time of dancing and, yes, there's a low time of mourning, but these things actually go together. Mourning is painful because you have the experience of the joy of the dance. The dance is joyous because you have the experience of the weight of mourning. And see, this third thing is this trusting that both are vital to our humanity. Both make us into more than just a beast. So if we can attain this third thing, this thing that's higher up and further back, this principle, this higher consciousness, then I promise our days immediately change. Even if your circumstances don't change, if you attain this mindset, everything in your life begins to change. Just like me moving out of my anger phase, gaining this insight, started to change everything. It wasn't even a day, a week, or a month before new opportunities became visible. that I would have dismissed, I would have become angry at, I would have ignored. Once they were visible, I followed, I served, I embraced, I took them as they came, even though at first I would have been repelled by them. You see, the aggravator in your life might just be the scourge of love that reminds us not to respond in some vain effort of wind grabbing. That's the wisdom of Solomon. In saying that God loves you so much that he's going to bring both extremes into your world. Not so that you can possess either of them, but that you can live within a place of accepting both sides. And if you can accept that experience, if you can accept the present moment, the presence, then our anger exposes our proud assumption that we understand all the issues. You see, you're angry because you're proud, just like I am. You're aggravated because you think you have it figured out and could do better. The moment of acceptance suddenly changes everything. Nothing is ever missing from each and every moment. Each and every moment is perfectly complete. Nothing's missing. This is to experience and trust the providence of God. This is what Solomon was getting at. Now, folks, this perspective is transformative. This is not a how-to. This is a wake-up call to reframe some of the malware scripts that may be running in your life. This perspective allows us to hold space for whatever may come. And regardless of our circumstances, we now have the power to enjoy our life. Why? Because we are actually in it.